Through the years in Clanton, I'd heard plenty of horror stories of imprisonment at the state penitentiary at Parchman. It was in sprawling farmland in the Delta, the richest farming region in the state, 2 hours west of Clanton. Living conditions were wretched, cramped barracks that were suffocating in the summer and frigid in the winter, ghastly food, scant medical care, a slave system, brutal sex, forced labor, sadistic guards, the list was endless and pathetic. When I thought of Danny Padgett, which I did often, I was always comforted by the belief that he was at Parchman getting what he deserved. He was lucky he hadn't been strapped to a chair in a gas chamber. My assumption was wrong. In the late 60s, in an effort to ease the overcrowding at Parchman, the state had built 2 satellite prisons, or camps as they were known. The plan had been to place 1,000 nonviolent offenders in more civilized confinement. They would obtain job training, even qualify for work release. One such satellite was near the small town of Broomfield, 3 hours south of Clanton. Judge Lupus died in 1972. During the Padgett trial, his stenographer had been a homely young woman named Darla Claybo. She worked for Lupus for a few years and after his death left the area. When she walked into my office late one afternoon in the summer of 1977, I knew I had seen her somewhere in the distant past. Darla introduced herself, and I quickly remembered where I'd seen her. For 5 straight days during the Padgett trial, she had sat below the bench, next to the exhibit table, taking down every word. She was now living in Alabama and had driven 5 hours to tell me something. First, she swore me to absolute secrecy. Her hometown was Broomfield. 2 weeks earlier, she had been visiting her mother when she saw a familiar face walking down the sidewalk around lunchtime. It was Danny Padgett, strolling along with a buddy. She was so startled she tripped on the edge of a curb and almost fell into the street. They walked into a local diner and sat down for lunch. Darla saw them through a window and decided not to go in. There was a chance Padgett might recognize her, though she wasn't sure why that frightened her. The man with him wore the uniform that was common in Broomfield: navy slacks, a short-sleeved white shirt with the words Broomfield Correctional Facility in very small letters over the pocket. He also wore black cowboy boots and no gun whatsoever. She explained that some of the guards who handled the prisoners on work release had the option of carrying a weapon. It was hard to imagine a white man in Mississippi voluntarily declining to carry a gun if given the option, but she suspected that perhaps Danny didn't want his own personal guard to be armed. Danny was wearing white dungarees and a white shirt, possibly issued by the camp. The two enjoyed a long lunch and appeared to be good friends. From her car, Darla watched them leave the diner. She followed from a distance as they took a leisurely stroll for a few blocks until Danny entered a building that housed the regional office of the Mississippi Highway Department. The guard got into a camp vehicle and drove away. The following morning, Darla's mother entered the building under the pretext of filing a complaint about a road in need of repair. She was rudely informed that no such procedure existed, and in the ensuing brouhaha, managed to catch a glimpse of the young man Darla had carefully described. He was holding a clipboard and appeared to be just another useless pencil pusher. Darla's mother had a friend whose son worked as a clerk at the Broomfield camp. He confirmed that Danny Padgett had been moved there in the summer of 1974. When she finished with the story, she said, "Are you going to expose him?" I was reeling, but I could already see the story. "I will investigate," I said. "Depends on what I find." "Please do. This ain't right." "It's unbelievable. That little punk should be on death row." "I agree. I did 8 murder trials for Judge Lupus, and that one really sticks with me." "Me too." She swore me to secrecy again and left her address. She wanted a copy of the paper if we did the story.